My advice would be to figure out where all the ownership lies. Who owns what? Because that's something, that's how I operate today, too. I think ownership, communication, responsibility, accountability. I give people a lot of trust. I expect to have a lot of trust. But to have that, you need to own and say, here's what I own. This is my thing. You trust me to deliver on it. You trust me that if I need help, I'm going to ask for help.
Why do some companies succeed in driving growth while others fail? How do some individuals advance in their careers to lead teams that change industries? In the age of mobile, these are the stories of the companies shaping the way we interact with our world and the people who drive their growth. Hi, everyone. We are happy to have our next guest, Lisa Connelly. Lisa has been the CMO of Fishbrain for over 3 years, where she oversees Fishbrain's marketing operations and develops its marketing strategy and vision. Since the fall of 2020, Lisa has been responsible for growing and managing Fishbrain's e-commerce marketplace. Outside of Fishbrain, Lisa is an advisor and mentor for early stage founders and companies. Thank you so much for joining us, Lisa. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's fun to be here.
Awesome. So let's start with a little background on Fishbrain, your role, and how has the past year been for you and your team?
Sure. Yeah. So Fishbrain is an app as well as a marketplace and overall platform for sport fishing. And fishing is the world's most popular hobby. So I always say, even if you don't fish yourself, I guarantee you know someone who loves fishing, right? Everyone knows somebody who's obsessed with fishing in their life.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone does. So yeah, it's an incredibly popular hobby and sport and activity. So that is why it's sort of big enough to have a whole...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, a whole niche network around it. So yes, so I have been at Fishbrain, as you said, for a little over 3 years, leading the marketing team. In terms of how the last year has been for us, like everyone else, it's been a roller coaster. I think Fishbrain was an interesting place in that we benefited from a couple different trends that were happening, right? So one was the fact that like a lot of things shut down last year, obviously the pandemic, and one of the few activities you could do was go fishing. In most places, right?
I love that.
Most places you could. It was a nice, easy social distancing thing. You could even go with people and stay out apart from each other very easily. In a couple of places, it closed down, but not a lot. So we actually saw a lot of interest in growth, both our app and product, as well as like in the fishing industry in general, because people were looking for things to do. So like there was one day or one week last year in April when Fishbrain was the number one sports app in the entire United States. And in April, that's not really supposed to happen, right? Normally, there's other sports in April.
Yeah.
So that's just a sign of how big it was. So we definitely saw a lot of interest in growth from people, less like people trying out fishing for the first time and more people sort of coming back to it as a hobby they'd given up years before. So that was one thing that happened. And then also what happened is, as you mentioned, that we have a marketplace where we sell fishing gear. We partner with brands to sell fishing gear. Because if you're into fishing, of course, you have to buy tons of fishing gear, right?
Of course.
And so we had actually, that was already launched. We launched that in 2019. That was sort of going and growing. And then 2020 hit and all of a sudden e-commerce is huge and everyone's buying online. And wow, look, we have all this fishing gear online. And, you know, some of these bigger stores, Amazon, whoever, they were not focusing on fishing gear. They're focusing on, you know, essentials for a while. So we also benefited from that, which was really interesting. So we had a pretty good year. I think what we're looking at now this year is like, all right, what of those trends are going to stick around? What of them were anomalies? I think a lot of people I'm talking to in the marketing growth space right now are being like, 2020, like, was that the new normal? Was that a year we just completely throw out the data forever? Yeah. So we're still kind of figuring that out, I think, a little bit still.
And for those listeners who maybe don't understand the scale, you know, Fishbrain has grown to over 13 million users. I think last April alone, you grew your user base by 23%, which I think is quite impressive. These are not like hundreds of thousands of users. These are millions. And to grow at that level is like incredibly impressive.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. I mean, I think it does speak to, you know, both the size of this market. Like it really is very, very big that so many people are interested in fishing. And, you know, the average angler in the United States, they go fishing, I believe it's 19 times a year. So it is quite often. You know, if you think about it, at least in the summer when the weather's good, you'll go fishing probably once a week, right? If that's something you do. And of course, if you live in the south of the United States, you might go fishing more often. You might go fishing every day. So I think that's part of it. And then of course, like I absolutely a testament to our team at Fishbrain who, you know, been working and focusing on how to grow this, how to reach more people, how to bring value to people, right? When when you want to go fishing, like you should have fish brain is in your pocket to make that fishing experience better.
So how do you grow this? Like, tell us a bit about, you know, how did you grow? Was it all organic, word of mouth? Was it a lot of paid acquisition? How do you think about growth of fish brain and new user acquisition?
Yeah, so it's, you know, we do try to have, I would say, a healthy mix between the paid and the organic side. I would say we've definitely used paid as an important lever for us from the beginning. And I joined when the company, you know, had been around, let me think, it was 25 people when I joined, right? So there was a bit of marketing before then, but not as much. So, you know, that has been an important channel, just partially because, you know, when it comes to targeting on interests, you know, if you target someone whose interest is fishing, that's going to be pretty relevant, right? Like pretty good. But of course, also the core of FishBrain was that it was a social network, right? We were a vertical social network for people interested in fishing. So of course, it's also going to grow through the network. And that is something that has always been one of the channels for growth. And we continue to look at is sort of how do we make that social engine something that drives the community to both for retention as well as for new users. Because we have found that with FishBrain, people come for the tool, but they stay for the community, right? So they come because they want to know, where should I go fishing? What should I use to go fishing? Where can I fish near me, right? Those are the questions you're looking to answer. What's the weather going to be like where I want to go fishing? And so then they come and FishBrain can tell them that. And we have all this data and all this information from people who have used the app for a long time to help us tell you that. But what makes them stick around is the community, because then they get there, they can post a photo of the fish they caught in the place we told them to go catch it. And then they can get a bunch of feedback from the community saying, yeah, amazing. Or what did you use? Or wow, you should fish over here next time, right? The same validation you get on Instagram, any other kind of platform, you know, but it's from people who really understand you, who really understand the same passion that you have. So I would say, so that's the balance in terms of like, there's a lot of top funnel acquisition around sort of those search terms, as well as those people who are interested in this. And then, you know, more on the organic side, like there is a lot of word of mouth. We also, I would say, do a lot with influencers. You know, there are fishing influencers, like there are every other kind of influencers. So that's another channel for, you know, driving awareness. And then I would say now we are getting into more a bit general awareness out of home, for example, like we're doing billboards right now. We're doing radio ads. If you live, especially in Florida, Texas, San Diego, you will see a FishBrain billboard, which is super fun. So, you know, doing a bit more of that, getting a little bit less digital than maybe we've been before. So yeah. I mean, right now, I would say in terms of other growth things, we focus primarily on the U.S. It was 85% of our users are in the U.S., even though fishing is global, and we do have the app in a few different languages. We've tested some growth into other different markets. For example, like fishing is very seasonal, right? So in the Northern Hemisphere, fishing season more or less is going to be like April to September when it's warm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yes, there's ice fishing in the winter, but it's not as big. So we have also looked a lot at like, how do we sort of balance that seasonality by, you know, doing growth in the Southern Hemisphere, for example, you know, can we get users in the North Hemisphere winter? Can we get them from Australia, New Zealand? So that's another way we think about growth as well, as sort of how do you balance the sort of peak season and off season growth?
I love it. Any favorite campaigns? When you think about growth, it can be either a fish brain or in your career that you want to share with our audience?
Well, actually, this is a kind of a different, going back to my previous job, before I was at FishBrain, I was at Clue, which is a startup based in Berlin. It's a female health startup. At its core, I would say it's a period tracker, but it's, you know, all about tracking your body, understanding, you know, all the different things that impact your fertility. We did a lot of fun campaigns when I was at Clue. That was a really fun space to be in. And I would say this is maybe less of a campaign, but more of just sort of like a marketing poll, which you would not think would be so significant, and yet it was. And basically the tagline that we ran at Clue for a super long time when I was started there was that we said, not pink. We said, this app is not pink. And because there were so many female health apps, so many period tracking apps, when I started, there were 200 of them, and basically all of them were pink. So you could say, we're the one that's not pink. And it was amazing how successful that was and how much people were like, oh, awesome, thank you. And a period tracking app that's not pink, that's what we want. So I think that's like, I still think about that all the time. It's like, you can make things so uncomplicated, you know, overly complicated, but then it's like, oh, okay, it's just not pink. Yeah, okay, perfect. And that works.
I love it. That's really cool. Clue, I know about Clue. I think I met both the founders at a few different conferences, and I've always been so impressed about their growth and what they were able to achieve. So it's awesome that you were part of that journey and helped with that growth. How about the failed campaign? Something that you tried that didn't work?
Yeah, well, I can go back to another example for that one. And this is also speaking I think like influencers and product placement, right? So when I was working with Clue, you know, this was pretty early on with influencers, like Instagram, YouTube influencers, when they were really just starting to become a thing. And we sort of had an inkling, like maybe this is going to be something that will be big for us. Cause we had like when someone contacted us and say, well, I'll talk about you in my YouTube video. And then we were like, cool. And then she did. And it was like, where'd all these downloads come from? Like, wait a minute, maybe there's something here. So then we were like, great, that's cool. What if we can make sure that we mention Clue in a viral video? And there was this other sort of period company at the time who had a couple viral videos. And we're like, if we can just be mentioned in one of their viral videos, we'll definitely get a million downloads from that because their video got a million views. That's how it works, right? Something like that. And so we paid a bunch of money and said, you have to mention us in your next video. First of all, their next video didn't go viral, right? So like there was that. And second of all, like even if it had, that's like really not how it works, right? Like if you want someone, an influencer to like download your app off of a video, they have to kind of mention it in the right way. So that was a big learning for like, okay, you can't just like product placement alone is not really how it works, especially with apps. It's got to be like call to action. It's got to be like pretty adsy, you know. I mean, now it's super common, right? But like, when was this? 8 years ago, we didn't quite know that at the time. So that was a pretty big learning.
But now you use influencers. You mentioned you use influencer for FishBrain. Mm-hmm. What are some things that, you know, like some advice when people are thinking about influencers right now? Should they go for the bigger ones? Should they try to turn their own users into micro influencers? Like, what are some thoughts, your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is, it's quite interesting because it has evolved a lot and like the strategies we used to have, they don't always apply. I think it also super depends on the industry you're in. I mean, I would say kind of across the board in general, it's always really good to, but before even going after the people you're going after, just like, what are the talking points, right? Like, what are the key things you want to hit? And of course, they need to deliver their own way, but make those key things so simple. Like, here are the four bullet points. You must say these things in this way. Because every time we sort of let people do it themselves, it was never as effective. So I think being a pretty rigid is important. And then, yeah, I also actually, in the startups I advise now, I always say, do the micro influencers. Like, they're going to be so much, you know, so much better for you than spending a ton of money because it's going to be a smaller influencer, but their fans are, you know, they're going to be so dedicated, right? And especially if that person's trying to build an audience, they're going to be more likely to talk to you because like they're trying to build their own brand. So I definitely think like the micro influencer thing is not across the board, but a lot of the times the way to go, especially if you're starting out with it.
Got it. Cool. That's super interesting. So both a Clue and a FishBrain, you guys have apps and the app is it's very important part of your strategy. How do you think about, you know, the importance of mobile for a consumer brand today? And how do you think about like engaging and re-engaging users in the app and bringing them to the app versus on the website?
Yeah, I mean, both Clue and FishBrain, right, were mobile first. You know, so they started out as apps and then now then we sort of had the separate problem of like, okay, how do we bring this to the web? What's the web customer like? How is this different? So if you're talking about going the other way around, I mean, I guess it's still kind of the same question. Like you got to ask the question of why are we doing this? And is this going to provide value? And can we do something better or differently in an app than we could on web, right? So I think it's similar almost the way I think about any marketing channel. Like, why are we doing this? What are we hoping to achieve? And how will we know when we've achieved it?
Why do you think the web was important? Why, if you were mobile first, why was it important for you to also build a website and have a web presence?
Yeah, absolutely. For both of the companies I've worked for, going to web was absolutely important for acquisition and growth. Like it was just mandatory in terms of especially search, right? So for Clue, you know, there was this search opportunity. There wasn't really any sort of place you could go for questions about female health. Like WebMD was it. That didn't really count. So here's this huge opportunity. You know, if you want to search for questions about female health and get stuff that's actually legit and scientifically backed, there was nothing. There was a gap there, right? Same thing with FishBrain when it comes to phishing queries. There has been, and there still isn't, except for us, what we're trying to build, no central one place where you can get all these questions about where do I go fish? What time should I go fish? All these phishing questions. Like you would type in something and the top result would be 10 years old because no one had claimed that space. So I think on the search side for both of them is super important. And just acquisition, right? Web acquisition is cheaper generally than mobile. So to scale our growth and do different kinds of retargeting and all of that, you got to go to web. So those are the reasons we did. But in terms of like somebody else, right? I mean, it depends on what you're into. And for example, now if you have a commerce product, like I would say you better have a mobile commerce plan or you're using something, right? People want to shop on their phones.
Completely agree. And I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, Google hasn't figured out a way to do indexing of app content. If that was solved, probably less people would feel the need to create the website because they're like in-app conversations and questions will show up in Google, but those don't. So I think that's probably the reason most people who are mobile first go to the web. Acquisition is so hard on mobile, and acquiring people to the app first, it's complicated and very, very expensive.
Of course, there is, you know, like the sort of app store optimization, right, for the app store and Google Play. And, you know, that's always evolving and changing and is totally different from when I started out. And, I, you know, Apple's now going to be changing that all over again. So, like, there's certainly things you can do there. And that's very interesting how you optimize for to be found that way. But you can't, you know, if you really want to grow at scale, you can't just do one. You got to do it all over. So it's really part of your multi-platform strategy.
And it's more expensive. I mean, one of the branch products that I think sells the best is our journeys, because people find it a lot easier and cheaper to acquire people on the web. And then they use like banners to convert them to the app. And overall, the price to get someone to the app, even with the decreasing conversions, is lower than buying an app install directly. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And what are some tactics to convert people to like the pro subscription or even to acquire something? I'm sure there's a lot of apps who start free and then really find it very challenging to get people to. I've also advised startups. This is seems to be the biggest struggle when they have like they come up with the premium subscriptions. People don't like go for it. What are some of the tactics that you found successful on that side of things?
Yeah. With Fishbrain, the way it mostly breaks down in terms of what's free and what's pro is roughly like the social is the free and the sort of data utility is the paid, more or less, right? So it's like, you know, anyone can be there, but if you want to take advantage of the volume of the sort of us crunching the numbers to be like, here's where you should fish, that's something you got to pay for. But we don't want to pay to like have you connect with other anglers or like post your photos like that. You shouldn't have to pay for. So I think that's, we try, you know, obviously we talk so much about giving value to anglers and making a product that they're desperate to pay for. You know, that's something we think about all the time. So, you know, like it should be something that it is for those pros, right? And maybe if you're more casual, you're not quite ready to pay for it. But if you are this dedicated, it's worthwhile because you're using it all the time. So I think that that's one way that we like to think about it. But yeah, I mean, it's an ongoing thing. And that's a lot of what our product marketing effort is about too, is communicating like what you will get if you pay and why is it important to you. And making sure we're doing that in the best way possible and running a lot of A/B tests to say, if we communicate it this way, is that more effective? If we communicate it this way, is it more effective?
Got it. I love the idea of like A/B testing. And I think that probably, I think people probably don't do that enough, especially in mobile.
Oh God, are you kidding? People do it too much. I think people do it too much.
Never mind.
I don't know. Maybe just the circles we're in. I think sometimes we A/B test to like avoid making a decision. I mean, that's like the flip side, right? Whereas it's like A/B testing can be great. On the other hand, sometimes you need to be fast and just be like, I believe in this. This is my gut feeling. We're going with this.
Interesting. I haven't heard that this much. So I think you probably run in circles of people who are very, very data driven, which I love. But I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think it depends on the company. And I think some of the more traditional companies who are only now getting to mobile don't think about it as much. They just kind of want to build a beautiful app and like they're less, they do less A/B testing. I think it's probably the more performance driven younger companies that do more of it. So
yeah, that definitely could be true. I mean, that is a good point. I think that's the thing. I think it's sort of once you uncover or discover A/B testing, it can be really addictive. And it's like, oh, I don't need to pick a direction. I can just test them all. And it's like, well, you may test them all and none of it's significant. And then where are you? You still have to make a decision.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm thinking in the earlier days of Branch, we did a lot more A/B testing than we do today. So even thinking like now we probably should A/B test more. We still do A/B testing on ads and things like that, but probably not as much on our website. So something, you know, some food for thought for me that maybe we should do more of it. Okay, so you've had an awesome career. You've worked some cool brands. What do you think led to your growth? How did you, you know, even get into marketing? What do you think helped you become the leader you are today?
Yeah, so my background is in communications broadly, I would say. So I started out as a journalist, actually as a sports journalist, writing for a good old-fashioned newspaper in New Jersey. That was my first job out of college, covering the Yankees. And so I've always been interested in writing and communications, and then got out of newspapers in 2008, which was not a super good time to be in newspapers. A lot of people were getting laid off. So I moved back to Seattle, where I'm from, and kind of got into startups kind of accidentally. They weren't even really called startups then, but I was working for a company that makes blogs for lawyers and law firms, which is still going strong. And I was sort of on the editorial manager side of that. So then after that I got in, and then I worked for a PR agency, but I was the social media strategist. So helping a lot of these brands and companies with their, basically setting up their first Facebook page and sort of teaching them how Twitter could be important for them. So that was like, oh my gosh, I don't know, 10 years ago or something. Yeah. So then I got more into startups a bit and worked at a startup incubator as a product marketing manager there. And and then that's when I got my job at Clue. And, you know, basically I'd been doing kind of the agency thing for a little bit and really wanted to be in-house and be part of the core team and focus just on one product. And so I learned about Clue in Berlin and thought it was amazing. And yeah, moved there, basically crazy move to join there with like tons of risk and employee number 6 with the four founders and one iOS engineer and myself. But it was amazing, right? And to build up the marketing team. When I left, it was 60 people at the company. So there's basically a thread of sort of communications and writing and marketing and everything. I mean, I think for me, alongside a core of that is being a good manager and being a good boss is something that's really, really deeply important to me, because I've had some pretty poor managers in my time, but I've had a couple of amazing ones. And I've been fortunate enough to have some really incredible mentors as well. So I know how much impact your manager can have on you and your well-being and your career. So I do my best to be the best manager everyone's ever had. Like that's something, that's my goal with what I'm doing.
How do you learn that? I mean, I think, you know, if I think about my struggles as a leader, as a founder, I think the hardest thing for me has been to learn how to be a better manager. I think I did a lot of like feedback and 360s, and it's especially when you're thrown into, I mean, you probably had a similar experience as Clue. The company's moving so fast. There's so much going on. You're building a team so fast and you have to scale up into managing a lot of people really fast. How do you learn? What are some tools that helped you become better?
I mean, I definitely do read a lot about this. I read a lot of, I would say, yeah, like articles and blogs and books as well about, you know, what makes a good manager, what are some strategies for that. But I would say in terms of just behavior, for me, it's empathy is the biggest one. It's empathy and being honest and being vulnerable with people and, you know, being able to, if they're talking through something, to be able to really understand where they're coming from. And that doesn't mean like making it all about yourself, but if you can say like, I have been there, or I remember a feeling like that, is such a good way to connect with people. And I think also like not always trying to solve people's problems, right? Because sometimes people just want to complain, yeah, or they want to vent, and you don't need to like fix everything in the moment. I think that's something else that's really important. Yeah. And then of course, I believe tons in feedback, right? And giving people direct feedback and coaching them to give direct feedback. Because I don't believe in backstabbing workplaces. I have also worked at a few of those. Like I never want to have that. I always want people to be direct with each other and open with each other. And if you got a problem, you sort it out. There's no time to waste on gossip or talking behind people's backs or anything like that.
So, you know, you're a mentor for startups. What's a piece of advice you'd give anyone starting a company or actually joining a company really early like you did?
My advice would be to figure out where all the ownership lies. Who owns what, right? Because that's something, that's how I operate today too, is sort of, I think, you know, ownership, communication, responsibility, accountability. I give people a lot of trust. I expect to have a lot of trust. But to have that, you need to own and say, here's what I own. This is my thing. You trust me to deliver on it. You trust me that if I need help, I'm going to ask for help. So I think going into a new company, that's something that's really important. Or when you're setting up a company, is to understand this is what's on my plate. This is what's not on my plate. All of these things are covered, right? So then you don't have to spend so much time deciding, wait, like, were you going to do that? I was going to do that. Or there's two owners on this. That's never going to work. So yeah, I think ownership is figuring out the ownership is something that is only going to make you more effective in anything you do.
Agreed. Otherwise, and I've definitely seen companies fail because everyone thinks that they're CEO and they never had the discussion, or they never had discussion who owns a certain project or a certain area. And some things no one owns and some things everyone thinks they own. So that's really great advice. I definitely empathize with that. So beyond all the things you've talked about your career and you as a manager, what's like one thing that you think has influenced your career and it has helped you get to where you are that we wouldn't be able to find if we Googled you or went on your LinkedIn profile or a Twitter, which I stalked a bit today.
My inactive Twitter. I mean, I'm like, maybe you could sort of gather this, but I grew up loving to read. I read at a really early age and I read very fast. So I think that's something that's really helped me. And then because I was a journalist, I learned to write really fast and write on a deadline. So actually the ability to like write and read really quickly turns out to be really helpful in a startup, right? When it comes to like digital communication, but also just like cranking stuff out. So I would say that's something that like you can kind of read it between the lines, but you know, being able to do those two things really quickly and cleanly and effectively is something that has definitely served me pretty well.
Awesome. Do you only read like, you know, nonfiction things or do you have like a specific genre that you like outside of things that help your job?
Oh my God. Right now I actually am really into romance. I never was before. And then I kind of got into in the last year and there's so much fun romance novels. Like if you think romance is trashy and like not good writing, you really need to take a look at it again because romance is fantastic and super fun. So like that's the genre I've discovered in the last year that I am really enjoying.
I love it. No, I read YA fantasy and there's a lot of romance in that. So
I mean, I also read a lot of YA fantasy. So high five there.
Okay, maybe we should follow each other on Goodreads. I'm like super into Goodreads. I add every book and then I have people I follow. It's hard to find new books once you've like read a lot. Cool. Okay, lightning round, which I think is a good segue from this. This is a less serious part of our podcast. If you had to delete all the apps and you only had one left on your phone, what would you keep?
I would probably keep like one of the maps apps because like I've lost the ability to get anywhere without a map. So I would probably need to keep something so I know how to drive from place to place. I think, kind of embarrassing.
Are you an introvert?
Am I an introvert? No.
I'm trying to figure out when I ask this question, half the people use utility apps and half the people say communication apps. Like I would keep my messaging because I wanted to be able to connect with all my friends and my family. And then half the people are similar answers to you, which is something like a utility. So I'm trying to figure out, is it like introverts versus extroverts? Maybe not. Maybe it's just something about maybe it's like, how do you think about life? Is it more about the communication or like, you know, like the usefulness of things? And then if you had an app allow you to talk to an animal, what animal would you pick?
Oh, yes. So this would definitely be my dog, right? So my dog is a Shiba Inu, as we discussed. And if anyone else has a Shiba Inu, you know that they're very aloof and not easy to communicate with. And I would love to communicate with my dog, although actually, I don't want to know what he thinks about me. I've had him for almost 10 years, and I don't think I'm ready to hear what he thinks of me.
I love that. That's awesome. Well, this was awesome. I feel like I got to know you a lot better and I learned a bunch of new things. And thank you so much for joining us today. And if the audience wants to find you, what would be the best place?
You can find me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best way to reach me. I am on Twitter, but I try not to be. So LinkedIn is probably the best way you can find me. And you should check out FishBrain. It's just fishbrain.com or search for it in the App Store if you're interested in fishing or you know someone who is.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Lisa. It was great having you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please leave a review wherever you listen to this and share with someone trying to grow their career. Until next time, keep growing.